Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, A&E to Bravo and more, no show is off limits to the truth as I see it, all from the couch just like you. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend who says all the things you're thinking, but you have the manners to never say aloud. Be sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss a week, and find me everywhere at Reality TV Pod. Support the show and score some amazing perks and merch, as well as some bonus episodes at Patreon.com/RealityTVPod. Now sit back, it's time to get salty. Hey there, welcome back, and welcome to a little bit of a crazy show today. I got a good one for you. My buddy Grant Rutter from Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk is joining me a little bit later. We're going to be talking Real Housewives of New Jersey, but I also want to talk a little bit about the Oscars before I get into Love After Lockup and Sister Wives and Seeking Sister Wife. Now, normally I really reserve my Sunday nights as my precious little polygamy night, but Sunday night on the Oscars, I had to watch it. Normally, I don't watch award shows. I just don't really get into it. Something about it just seems really fake, over the top, and phony. But I had to watch the Oscars this year. Maybe it was, you know, not having a host or something, but I was intrigued. So I DVR'd, recorded, is that even a verb? DVR'd, whatever. I recorded everything on TLC basically on Sunday nights, just dove in headfirst into the Oscars. Didn't fast forward through commercials, which was very weird for me because I fucking can't stand commercials. But truth be told, I loved every second of it. I haven't seen any of the movies that are in the running for basically anything besides Bohemian Rhapsody and Bao, the little short film that came before. I think it was Coco, right? Or maybe it was Moana. I don't know. I don't go out to the movies. I don't see a whole lot. But let's be honest, we're watching it because we want to see what people are wearing and if anyone fucks up or if anyone falls or anything like that. Speaking of, guess what happened while cameras were not rolling? Apparently, according to Page Six, Rami Malek fell after he received the Oscars. He was in the front row and stumbled and fell. They even said that he needed a medic, which sounded pretty weird to me. I mean, if you just stumbled and fell, why would you need a medic? Maybe it was just to kind of cover, like, oh, maybe I really am injured. That way you don't have to brush it off and be like, oh, there was something on the carpet there. Watch out, guys. I really did that as a PSA for everyone else. I fell so you didn't have to. So Rami fell. I absolutely was thrilled that he won because, again, it really was the only movie that I saw, so I was rooting for him. And also, I have a very strange attraction for him, even though he is nothing of my type. But his twin brother is. Thank you, Alex, for tagging me on Twitter. His brother is freaking hot. He's Tanner. He has a beard. I mean, he's got basically everything going for him, especially that his brother is Rami. Let's talk about the fashions because you know I'm an expert. I'm actually wearing Exhilaration leggings right now, so you know you can really get the facts from me. This year, there seemed to be a lot of silver. J-Lo was wearing it. Brie Larson, I think that's her name, was wearing it. Lots and lots of silver, reflective, mirrored kind of thing. So, you know, that's going to be the big rage in prom fashion. I thought it was fine. J-Lo looks stunning as she always does. So it's not like she really knocked my socks off because she's always fucking gorgeous. She looks great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But my absolute favorites, I have a top three, possibly four. The fourth one that was on the fringe for me, Cate Blanchett. She had this kind of light turquoisey number with little flowers or little ripped kind of things on it. I just thought it was really pretty. I don't know if it was the color or what, but something just was very striking for me. Now, top three, Gemma Chan. She was wearing that pink, very billowy kind of thing. I think it had pockets. If it didn't, it really could have because it looks great. Had the little neck thing. You can see I am, once again, I'm very well versed in the fashion culture. I know all of the terms like pockets and neck thing. I mean, if I don't make it to the next season of Project Runway, something's wrong. Okay, the next two, I really don't think you could argue with me at all, is that Julia Roberts looked fucking stunning. She was perfection. She was impeccable. Her skin looked great. The hair, the earrings, I loved it all. Loved it all. Now, the third one, I don't know her name. I know that she presented the Green Book for Best Film with Representative Elijah Cummings. Whoever that was, she looked so beautiful. It was kind of like a 1920s flapper era looking dress, a little chainmail kind of thing, fitted, slinky. Oh, she just looked beautiful. I loved the dress. I don't know if it was really Oscars kind of dress, but I don't care. It was absolutely beautiful. Whatever her name is, someone let me know. I tried looking it up every which way. I probably would know if I saw any of the movies or if I had my finger on the pulse besides anything but polygamy shows and felons who fall in love, but I just don't know. Okay, so who else dresses? Oh, okay, I'll tell you who I am absolutely sexually attracted to. I know you guys, I am coming a very long way in having this podcast. I would normally never even think about these things, but now I am. So there were three people who took my freaking breath away. The first being Michael Keaton, of all people. I have no idea, something about the salt and pepper and the glasses. I was digging it. Now, the next two were actually presenting together. One of them I know that I have always had a crush on, and that is the one and only Paul Rudd. I mean, I almost feel like if you don't have a crush on him, something is wrong with you. Yes, I know I've heard the little cheating rumors, and that breaks my fucking heart because he's always just been, I mean, from the days that you saw him in Clueless, right? That is how you think of Paul Rudd being all the freaking time. So I absolutely adore him. Anything he does wrong, I don't care. He will always be a total heartthrob to me. Now, he presented with Sarah Paulson, and I don't know how it happened. It could just be her proximity to Paul Rudd, but I was digging Sarah. I was like, okay, she can be kind of sexy. Not in the Marcia Clark earrings on the OJ thing. That was a bad, bad wig. Maybe I just need to think about her like that and I will not be as heartbroken that she isn't my best friend, or I would even let her be a sister wife. If I were married to Paul Rudd, I would totally be fine if Sarah was his second wife. I would have to be first, of course. I mean, I can't be walking around like a Janelle, right? I gotta be a Robin. I'm not a Mary. We'll get into that later. I'm getting off base here. Okay, Melissa McCarthy, loved her. And you know what I loved even more? According to Page Six, she arrived at the Vanity Fair after party with her husband. Oh, he's so cute. Ben Falcone. They showed up wearing matching Adidas track suits. Can we all just agree that we all need to be friends with Melissa McCarthy? I feel like she needs to find out about the Orchard of Snark and get her ass in there. Love her. I also loved Tina Fey, Maya Rudolph, and Amy Poehler opening up the show. Some people didn't think that they were that funny, but I don't freaking care. They are three badass women. They're funny. They're smart. I love them and them together. It just doesn't get any better to me. Now, the one moment in award shows that always make me extremely uncomfortable, so much so that in the rare instance that I'm actually watching an award show, I will not watch the segments, and that is always the in memoriam. I always feel badly because there's always those super popular people who have died. So let's just say, for example, this year, Penny Marshall. All of a sudden, you would just hear a bunch of clapping or, you know, aw, things like that. And that always makes me feel bad for the other people who don't get that clap or who don't get the extra little 2-second clip that they give the most popular. But this year at the Oscars, if you noticed, you didn't hear any of that. I don't know if it's because they wanted us to just hear the instrumental and they didn't record the audience doing anything, but it made me really happy that no one got applause and no one got any oohs and ahs because all of the deceased artists of the Academy should receive equal silence, I guess. I don't really know what I'm saying here. Now, the last thing I want to touch on, oh, I forgot about Laura Dern. she also looked incredible. Sorry, I'm just going through my notes here. The last thing I need to mention, this is very, very important. I need some eyes on the prize. I need you to go and find where this is, because as I was watching the Oscars, I broke my little intermittent fasting rule and I enjoyed some wine and I enjoyed some Chex Mix. It's like the sweet, salty, or no, I take it back. It was like the turtle variety. And in said turtle variety, there was little nuggets of caramel corn, and it brought me so much happiness because it reminded me of a little goodie my grandma, my great aunt used to have for me, and it was something called Fiddle Faddle. If you know what I'm talking about, it came in this rectangular box like you would buy, I don't know, fruit snacks or something. It was like, it's like that size box. It is caramel corn and would have little salty peanuts stuck to it. If you know where Fiddle Faddle is sold, please tell me, tag me. I don't care if it is at a gas station. You know me, that is saying a lot. I will go and buy the fucking Fiddle Faddle because now I'm craving it more than I crave caramel apples after they're not in season. Okay, so, wow. Okay, I'm at about at least 10 minutes of rambling here. So shall we just jump into some love after lockup? This episode, visits and violations. I felt violated because I felt as if my heart were just ripped out of my chest by WeTV and stomped all over. I was more disappointed in this episode than I was after watching, a season of Sister Wives and not seeing fucking Tony. I mean, what are you doing to us, WeTV? I know you added 10 episodes, but if you're going to add them, make them quality. Now, I'm always going to watch them because I am addicted to this show, but I'm just laying that out there. I was extremely disappointed. Now, let's get into Matt and Caitlin because this was a painful episode for a couple different reasons. Firstly, because those thick-ass slabs of bacon in a cast iron skillet. Oh, I was immediately regretting doing my little fasting thing here. I mean, Saint Mother Matt, whatever the fuck her name is, I know we learned it, but it doesn't matter. This woman, above all else, she's Matt's mother and the bullshit she's got to deal with, but she's got the time to be frying up some bacon in a nicely seasoned cast iron skillet. Just hand the woman a key to a Catholic church and call it hers. Okay, where were we? Oh, right, Caitlin's mom died. So I don't remember if we had learned that Matt's dad actually passed away, but he did. And wouldn't you know it, Matt says that he didn't take it as hard as Caitlin's taking her mom's death. I mean, shocking, right? Considering how he treats his mom, you think he'd still be heartbroken over his dad's death. Well, we also learn that Matt has never had a girlfriend, likely because he's always been in, you know, prison. But Matt is also an 11-year-old boy. I mean, honestly, he is like Tom Hanks in the movie Big. Hear me out. It's got a little twist to it, but think about it. He is a little boy in a man's body. He is the felonious? Is that a word? Yeah, he's the felonious B.I.G. He's the felonious B.I.G., if you will. A grown man in a boy's body. He lives really exclusively on tater tots, ketchup, and big glasses of cold milk. And of course, he's got to have his fresh undies laundered in his favorite scent of Snuggle, and only his mom can launder it for him. Now, I really had some high hopes for this grief counselor at the funeral parlor. Do you still call them funeral parlors? Well, I am. Now, this woman, I went back, I zoomed in on her little name card there. Her name's Coretta. She is someone I'd immediately pour my heart out to because she has a face exactly like mine. I totally get it. I have a face like Coretta's. It just begs people, tell me everything, bare your soul to me. And Caitlin, well, she's no different than anyone else. She tried to resist and refuse the offer to answer some questions, but all of a sudden, the floodgates opened and all of the resentments that she has towards Matt, just emotional, I was going to say emotional diarrhea, but somehow that just doesn't seem appropriate when we're talking about a death. I'll just say emotional baggage. Okay. So all of this baggage that she's been caring about Matt, she just lets it loose. And this is when Coretta turns the easy ash exchange into a full-blown relationship therapy session. I mean, did you see the body language? Caitlin is turning every which way away from Matt, and Matt is just sitting there, just waiting for his hot tots to arrive. And I'll tell you one thing. I think Coretta could have made it happen because, oh, I took a little look-see on her LinkedIn only because I was really curious about her counseling credentials because her little name tag said Coretta. It had her last name. You can go back and look yourself. But it said grief counselor / funeral director. So I was like, okay, I wonder if she is like a relationship counselor. They keep one on staff. Well, turns out she's got none, zero counseling credentials. However, she does have some catering experience, so I'm sure some tater tots and thick sliced bacon would be a breeze for her. Now, all in all, even though Caitlin threw her used dirty tissue on a side table, I absolutely fucking saw that. No one deserves to be treated the way that she is treated, especially during the time of grief. And I mean, someone very close to you just died and you are actually in the funeral home. I mean, God, what a fucking asshole. Now, I'm trying to be fair, so I'm just gonna be devil's advocate here, okay? Now, I'm not saying Matt was justified in reacting the way he did. Absolutely not. But he wasn't expecting this to be like a group therapy session when he walked in there. It kind of seemed like an ambush, like maybe Caitlin was talking shit about him to Coretta. It just, I can see how he felt set up. But again, let me be clear, Matt is absolutely an asshole. Now let's move on to Megan, Michael, and Sarah. Once again, super disappointed because really nothing fucking happened, but let's talk about it. We pick up where we left off. Michael's at the very bottom of the escalator. A+, maybe we should nominate Love After Lockup for some sort of cinematography award because, you know, I love this behind the scenes kind of stuff or the process leading up to it. If you think about Michael at the bottom of that escalator, you know, where he's got his hands on his face and he's looking up. Well, they want us to think that's what Megan's seeing. But no, think about it. There was actually a camera person who was at the top of the escalator and was like, hey, Mike, pretend I'm Megan coming down. How do you feel? What are you going to look like? And someone went down with a camera on their shoulder, just taping it. Anyone else seeing just the humor in this? All right, where the fuck was I? I'm all over the place today. This is what award shows do to me, apparently. It's all the Oscars' fault that I'm rambling like Danielle Mullins Jabali. Oh, Jesus Christ, forgive me. All right, Megan, right. Megan's purchased a one-way ticket so she can stay as long as she wants with her little Mikey. Oh, apparently she's been missing him intimately. And if it were up to Megan, she would turn this trip into an engagement celebration. But first, as much as we all cannot stand Julie Chen, I think we need her in here narrating this throuple because every scene ends with a perfect but first moment where we're zooming back to New York or flashing to Fort Worth, Texas. Take it away, Julie. We think Michael is going to come clean to Megan in the parking garage, but first he tells her that he has to check in with his parole officer. Okay, well, this is where Megan pulls a real Jody and fucks up the directions. She leads them 40 minutes out of the way. This is absolutely classic Jody Huff move. Directions in the dishwasher. There really is no quicker way to end the honeymoon phase of a new relationship than those two things. Fucking up driving directions or coming to the conclusion that the person that you're driving with sucks at directions and or sucks at driving or being a passenger and figuring out how your partner empties and loads a dishwasher. Those two things, that'll do it. Those two things you need to figure out before you, I would say, even sleep together. I'm just throwing it out there. That should really be the new relationship advice, dishwasher driving directions, triple D, the triple D relationship cure. That's the name of my new book. It's going to be coming at you winter 2035. Look for it on Amazon. It's already in the works. So Michael, right, he figures out he's in the wrong town, speeds over to the police station, but his parole officer is there. He's already pissed that he's late. And it's not even that Michael is late. He's not even supposed to be driving. Megan doesn't know this, so it is quite the welcome to New York. She's got to get out of the car. They crack open her Samsonite, rifle through it, and the officer decides, you know what? This is your, well, it's not a second warning. This is your second chance. You're in violation of parole because you're late. You're getting arrested. You're getting locked up right now. Meggles is pissed. She's feeling violated because she probably had, I don't know, her thrusting flashcards. They've been rifled through. They know all her new moves. So once again, she's alone in a hotel room. Michael is in jail. We find out that mother and sister Michael are also fired the fuck up because now they're on this roller coaster once again. They're always having Michael in and out of jail, and that takes a toll on a family, I can only imagine. But instead of being upset with Michael, I did not like this, they're mad at Megan, and his mom decides to confront Megan at, I think it's a Holiday Inn Express. Boom, 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 da-na-na-na-na-na. They have Mother Michael, whose name is Caroline, a not-so-sweet Caroline. She is sauntering down the hallway, charging at Megan's room. We get knock, knock, knock. Megan opens up. She's got this naive smile on her face. I think she thought it was going to be Michael, like production was fooling her. And, oh, Michael, you mean you're here? But no, there is Michael's mother. She trying to be, I don't know, forceful, passive-aggressively nice but not nice. This is kind of like my description of fashions. I'm not very specific. I'm very ambiguous, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. Almost like when someone comes to your door, they're like those teenagers that they drop at the end of the block that you almost wonder if it's like a human trafficking thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? Or like, are these runaway children? I think I saw 2020 on it because every time they come to my door, I want to be like, do you need help? Do you need to use my phone to call someone? But then I'm also afraid that they're scoping out my house and what they're going to steal. I once had, okay, really quick story here because this will just give you a clearer picture on how fucking crazy I am. When we first moved in here, I was painting some furniture in my garage and I had my headphones on, my little earbuds in. And this girl came up and startled me because I didn't hear her coming towards me. And I was like, oh, well, she wanted to sell me some textbooks or some shit. And I knew it was kind of a scam, but she had this accent and she seemed all alone. And she asked if she could use my washroom. And I don't like strangers using my bathroom because then I feel like I need to fully sanitize it and get foreign, not foreign, meaning out of the country, but foreign to my family's germs out of the house, but I couldn't say no. So I let her use the washroom and then I got myself out of the situation from buying anything, even though I felt very guilted into it, but I said no. And then as soon as she left, I did some searching on Facebook and I found out who she was because I wanted to make sure she wasn't stolen from Sweden or wherever she was from and maybe her family didn't know where she was and she needed to get back. Long story short, she's okay. She's been with the company for a while and she's safe. I don't think she was being human trafficked, but I think this company did kind of oversell the job to her. But anyhow, Mother Michael, she's there. She tells Megan, Michael's locked up. I have nothing more to say to you. I cannot answer any questions that you have. Very police officer, first 48. I'm asking you the questions. You're not asking me the questions kind of thing. There really is nothing more for her to say. She doesn't want to get involved with this kind of bullshit, and I don't blame her. This is Michael's mess for him to clean up, and let's really just lay it out there. No matter what she says to anyone, she's going to be either betraying her son or Sarah or Megan. It's a no-win for her no matter what she does. Now let's talk about Megan for a moment because you know I've always rooted for her. I, for some reason, find her more likable than Sarah for no reason whatsoever. But after seeing the way she unpacked her suitcase, Megan is at least 35% pure monster. At first, I thought, oh, she's just like rifling through her suitcase. She's grabbing a robe or some pajamas to throw on, change into. But she continued to just toss things on her bed. She's dumping everything into this ginormous pile. Who the fuck does that? Megan, you can do better. Just do better. It's not even a can, it's a do. Now, Sarah, okay. I find her less likable, but she also deserves better. Both of these women do, but Sarah deserves more screen time because, god damn it, WeTV tricked us with another freaking week of waiting. Still no Megan and Sarah face-off. We're going on the third freaking week. All right, Tracy and Clint. Oh, man. You know, Clint has just been doing fantastic. Sure, Tracy has been in jail twice since he married her 2 weeks ago, but he's got his cousin Brady by his side to help him through this. Between bouts of passing out, or maybe it's just like the moment's oxygen is finally able to reach Brady's fried brain, he asks Clint how long Tracy is going to be in jail. Could be 2 months, could be 20 years. Doesn't matter because I'm still married and I still have this dress shirt my mom bought me to wear for my goddess. Oh boy. Okay, you know it's bad when Brady, who doesn't even know he's wearing two t-shirts, says he thinks Clint is crazy. Well, then we get the phone call from the lawyer Clint is wasting his money on, and he says Clint can't see Tracy today. Now, even though he can't see her, he is going to go back to that jail and he is going to show her there is a man who is going to be with her till the end. Ooh, okay. Is that a threat? Yikes. Someone get, I'm going to put Mankiewicz on the case, all right? Get him on the horn. Tell him be ready to fly out to New Mexico any minute now. Well, time to catch up with Lizzie and Scott. As a reminder, Lizzie's been out of prison for, I think she said a week or two, and she's meeting up with her friend Mel, who was also recently released. Mel, she seemed pretty cute, seemed like she had a lot more sense in her than Lizzie, because as soon as Lizzie tells her how she's engaged, Mel couldn't even hide her shock and her disgust. She thinks it's just stupid. Why in the world would you jump into a marriage, even a serious relationship with a guy that you were considering a trick like 10 days ago? But Lizzie, no, that's not what she's doing. He's not a trick. I mean, Scott's not looking for sex in exchange. All he wants is to hold her hand and give her a little peck on the cheek. Okay. Well, good old Mel blew Lizzie's cover in a fucking instant because she flat out says that Lizzie is addicted to using men. And let me be clear, she said men, M-E-N, not just man singular. Men would imply that not too long ago, again, like 10 days ago, Lizzie was with other men. I mean, God, love frickin' Mel. We need more of her. Now, over at the privately owned, I'm going to go former Econo Lodge, Scott laces up his Doc Martens, glues in his new teeth, and he's going to call the one person in the world who wants to talk to Scott less than Lizzie. Char. Remember, Char is Scott's best friend who wants to kick him in the fucking horse teeth more than all of us do. She doesn't seem too upset, which I think Scott kind of wanted, but I mean, what the fuck? The only time Scott calls Char these days is to bitch about the mess that he has chosen to put himself into since the last time they talked. That I would just block him out of my phone at this point. I don't know why Char continues to put up with this bullshit. Prime example of what I'm talking about, of Scott choosing to put himself into this situation. Why is he giving Lizzie his credit card to just let her go shopping? And what she spent? Never in my life have I spent $1,900 on clothes, and I'm including my wedding dress and veil and all that kind of stuff together. I mean, maybe I'm thinking like furniture or something, but for a few cotton dresses, one of them I zoomed in was $229. That is ridiculous. And by the way, I was thinking, oh, maybe they're going there and they're getting a discount because they're filming there. No, no. It said discount $0. So, I mean, what the fuck? Scott, you are just stupid. You're dumb. And Lizzie, clearly you are just a user. I know she tries to convince us otherwise in the interstitial clip where she also informs us she doesn't play with herself. But I disagree with her about this leopard spots analogy that she said. I mean, she may not be a leopard, but she was a convicted felon, and she admits that she intentionally tricks men for money while she was undergoing her AA and her transition to sainthood. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, bullshit. Now jump to Jasmine busting Lizzie on her way back from shopping. Finally, I needed someone to put Lizzie in her place. And yes, Jasmine, she's got her issues and she can be annoying too, but I don't blame Jasmine at all. This is what I think is at the heart of Jasmine's resentment. Lizzie is blowing $2,000 and there are four of them, or maybe three of them now that Scott's son left. They're slumming it at some weird ass hotel. And here's her mom, who is being greedy. I agree with Jasmine. You're using this guy's money, whether it's your money, his money, whatever. It's $2,000 that could go towards a place for you to be living together. Now, Lizzie, we know she has no intention of living with Jasmine, just the two of them. Of course, she's going to go live with Scott because she's got no other place to go. She doesn't want to get a job. But from Jasmine's perspective, she could have used that to invest in a living situation and a relationship with her. It's just heartbreaking, honestly. They need to live separate, but I want Jasmine to live with her just because I want Jasmine to have a mom, a real mom, for even just a moment. Speaking of mothers and motherhood, let's talk about Brittany and Marcelino. The two of them are at the park with Brittany's son, Giovanni. It was cute. I mean, that's all I can really say is it was a cute scene. Her son is cute, but not cute was Marcelino's shrine to himself back at their new apartment. You know, we all saw it. It's that Tarzan-esque modeling photo that has been going all around everywhere. And he's got it framed and hung on the wall. Now, I always talk about the confidence of people on reality shows, and this right here is a perfect example. Not even on a day where I feel the most put together or beautiful would I have a framed photo of myself hung to memorialize it. The only purpose a photo of just myself would do is if I put it like on the fridge and I'm going to use it to discourage me from sneaking Oreos for my kid's school lunch supply or something, or maybe, you know, fill up another glass of wine from my wine spigot. But no, not Marcelino. Let's just hope he loves his new baby as much as he loves himself, because surprise, Brittany finally tells Marcelino that she's pregnant. I thought it was very anticlimactic. Of course, he's going to be excited. What is he going to say? Oh no, I don't want you to be pregnant, and slow talk his way out of it. No, he's going to stand up. He's going to do this weird Marcelino slow dance move, which really grossed me out more than the cinder block walls and the random skull artwork in the kitchen. Now, like I said, that really is all that happened on Love After Lockup. Not a great episode. Next week, they better be bringing us the Sarah versus Meghan thing, or else, well, you know, I'm going to be watching it, taking notes anyway, because I fucking love this show. All right, let's take a quick break, and then I will be right back with Seeking Sister Wife and Sister Wives. I don't know about you, but for me, it's one of those weeks when no matter what I find in my pantry or fridge, nothing looks good, and I'm tired of the same stuff I've been making lately. Sound familiar? That's why I subscribe to Green Chef. After I tried my first box a couple months ago, Dave and I became hooked. Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company that makes eating well easy and affordable with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle. Meal plans include paleo, vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, for the Snowdens, Mediterranean, heart smart, lean and clean, gluten-free, and our favorite, omnivore. Dave is not typically the chef in our house, but he saw the easy recipe card with a big photo and step-by-step instructions, and he decided that he was going to get to it. He made pesto pork patties with fresh snow peas and mashed potatoes this weekend. It was really, really good. My daughter helped him in the kitchen, and I guess by helping, I mean she used the pre-measured, mostly prepped ingredients to stir and season. I love the fresh ingredients that are delivered right to my door, ingredients that are not typically in season at my local grocery store here in the Midwest. But here they are, showing up, high quality, clean ingredients, ready to go, and they taste so good. I've said this before, but the variety of flavors and cuisines are my favorite perk of Green Chef. We can go from having pita pizzas one night, pork patties the other, and then chicken pho the next. I really want you to try it out. You have nothing to lose. Eat healthy food that tastes incredible, and you can modify your subscription at any time. For $50 off your first box, go to greenchef.us/realitv. That's R-E-A-L-I-T-V. One more time to save $50 off your first box, greenchef.us/realitv. Well, we're going to have to address Cody's hair situation right off the bat. I have given it some deep thought as I watched 2 hours of these idiots talk about moving. Ugh, boring episode, but we're going to get to that in just a second because, like I said, we got to talk about this hair situation. I think it's as if his inspiration is one of those old school, is it Davy Crockett or whatever the hell, like one of those raccoon pelt hats, I think that's what they call it. But he's got it on wrong. He's got the tail resting atop his bald head. And then the circular part of the hat is just sitting at the back. I mean, I don't understand it. I'm sorry if you're hearing me rub my hands over my face, much like Michael on Love After Lockup. I just don't understand how every week his hair just keeps getting worse. I'm starting to think the whole reason Cody wants to move so badly is because he thinks there's something about Vegas. Maybe it's the weather system or how it is above or below sea level. I don't really know because I'm really bad at geography, but something in him is making him want to rebel away from Vegas. His hair wants to rebel away from his head. McKelty rebelled from society when she married Tony, and now it's his follicles' turn. Well, like I said, we're still on this where are we going to move and when situation when Mary invites Mariah and her girlfriend Audrey to move into her house for the summer. I've said this before, but for some reason, I don't like Audrey. There's no reason for it. I just don't enjoy her as much as I enjoy Mariah. Now, I am not saying that because I just don't want her dating anyone or I'm anti-gay. Obviously, if you know anything about me, I am not at all. I'm also not one to say, don't live together before you're married, because I think it's just, it's an old thing. I get it if it's your values and everything, but okay, remember what I just talked about with the triple D dishwasher and driving directions? It kind of goes along with that. I was hoping that's what Cody was going for. He was oh so close. I was giving him a little virtual pat on the back because he explained how he thinks being gay is biological and living together is more of a morals value thing. I mean, he was so close. Point being, I was really proud of Cody that he acknowledged it and he's accepting his daughter in a traditional, conservative type of a religion that they're in. I think that is absolutely wonderful. Mark a point on the mission statement for Cody, if that is even a thing. But you better do it quickly because Mary is hinting at wanting to spend alone time with Cody. Did you catch that? If you didn't, trust me, it is worth going back and watching. It's near the beginning of the episode. Mary and him are talking about should Audrey and Mariah live together in her place. And she makes some really harmless, it truly was, I hate Mary, but it's true. It was a harmless side comment about Cody having too much time on his hands and that she would like some of that extra time, if you know what I mean. And he actually said, well, that's the cue for me to go, and stood up and could not get the fuck out of that living room fast enough. The cowardly lion was trying to giggle her way out of it with her little dead snaggle tooth resting on her bottom lip, like, oh, that doesn't hurt her feelings, but trust me, Nancy, the family therapist, will be hearing about this one. I'm going to fast forward through Aspen and Mitch getting dance lessons because I really don't care. The only lessons I want to see on Sister Wives are the ones with Christine and her singing coach. I'm crossing my fingers for a solo with some bagpipes or some shit. Whatever it is, she better be sneaky with it because I think Aspen is smart enough not to let her anywhere near her dream a little dream. Now jump to what we all watch Sister Wives for, awkward conversations with Mary. So Mary is mentioning that she had this conversation with Christine after Axel was born. Remember when she wasn't there for the birth, but everyone else was? So they had this conversation. She wants to finish it. But mind you, the conversation was originally had in December 2017. So we are now a year later, and they are just now coming back around to how Mary makes everyone uncomfortable. I mean, for the record, I was thrilled Christine was direct about her not liking to be around Mary because, you know, she sucks. But Mary, oh God, I don't understand this whole thing, but let's break it down first. Mary calls Christine over to her upstairs couch, and we know this because the couch has arms on it, and we also find out that the Browns are a shoes-on kind of family. I'll never understand that, but there's bigger catfish to fry with these folks. So Mary tells Christine she basically feels like she deserved an apology for, number one, how direct Christine was with her, and Christine just simply apologized. She's like, yeah, you're right. Well, the other thing that Mary was still upset about, because, you know, a simple apology is not enough. She's got to have more drama. She said she didn't like that she did it in an unsafe way. She should have done it more in private. Well, this is what I don't understand. So if that's what you wanted, why are you having this conversation in front of cameras, which is exactly what you were saying that you didn't want? It just, it's so Mary. It's her wanting to make people feel like they are victimizing her. So she goes on to talk even more, and this leads to Christine apologizing once again, and I'm going to apologize because my kids are playing in the background and you can hear it. But Christine apologizes. She's like, you know what? I was kind of a bitch in the past, and it was because I was overwhelmed with life in general. I do think everyone can relate, whether you are a man, a woman, you're single, you're a mom, whatever. It's just like Christine. You're over it. You just want to live your life and do your thing. Holy shit, are my kids the loudest or what? Anyhow, I don't really honestly think she cares that much about what Mary does as long as she isn't dragging her into some bullshit catfish cover story and dragging the family into it. Now let's fast forward to Mary thinking she's going to make RBF, also known as resting bitch face, go viral. Now, in Mary's defense, I had to dig deep to find a defense here, but maybe it's because she was a little busy deep-throating bananas back in, what, 2013, when we were all laughing at RBF. Now, in the second hour of the show, we completely switch gears and we get to Mariah and Audrey at Mary's house, and there's this talk about Mariah having an announcement. Little Axel is there, everyone wants to hold him, and oh my God, never fucking mind, because Holy Taco Tuesday, it is the one and only motherfucking Tonic. I was not expecting that. I saw McKelty holding Axel and she was saying, oh, I want to hold him. But I thought she was talking to Isabel and like Audrey or someone else because I saw like a chubby, womanly upper arm, much like my own, and just a messy brown blob of a bob. So I just assumed, but no, it was frickin' Tony. And if you noticed, the crew didn't even give him a chance to speak because they're probably still having PTSD after not only taping the first dance, but then they also had to edit in their first dance during the whole Aspen and Mitch dancing scene, whatever. But you know who else is going to need some therapy? It's going to be me because we find out Mariah's big news. No, she and Audrey are not engaged. They are moving to Chicago, and Mary wants to come visit and pretend she's an expert about the Chicago River and drinking beer. Don't you dare ruin my city, Mary. No, no. Mariah, you're allowed in, absolutely. Cody, you better bring a hat because it does get windy and your hair follicles need some tenderness these days. That is actually a perfect transition to talk about Cody finding this little town in Arizona. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called Flagstaff, and man, Cody, what a find. I almost wonder if the 79,000 people in town have ever heard of it themselves. I mean, seriously, you guys, is it just me? We've all heard of Flagstaff, correct? All right. So there's this rush to get to Arizona because Cody says that the homes that they own in Vegas right now, they're depreciating in value, so they have to move immediately. Or else, consequences be damned, we're going to move. You know, am I the only one getting a gut feeling that there is just something else, like some real reason Cody wants out? He keeps saying if he doesn't uproot, you know, four families now, he will be stuck in Vegas for another 5 years. Now, is that really the worst thing in the world? I mean, I get the housing market and losing money on your houses. Trust me, I do. I lived it. I get it. It just seems very strange to me, the urgency. I mean, does Cody need to get money out of the houses right now for some reason? Does he owe it? Does he need to pay someone off? I don't know. Something's very strange with it. It could just be he thinks it's a good opportunity to move out because Mary can now opt for Parawan. Or maybe this is just the whole point of their family or what Cody believes. He does whatever he wants for whatever reason it is, and he doesn't need to fully disclose anything because he's the man of the family. His women and children must follow him no matter what he does, no questions asked. He'll explain it later, and he'll give you a drip, maybe. Oh, God, he's just such a jerk. The misogyny is just, it's off the charts in this episode. Now, I'm going to fast forward through the home shopping scenes with Christine and Cody because all we really learn is that Cody really loves trees because, let's face it, he needs a windbreak for his hair. He's had several different opportunities to pull it back, but he doesn't until they go to the last one. And, you know, we just see different ways that he manipulates his wives into doing what he wants to do. Mainly, that means over-promising something and then under-informing them about what his real plan is. So far, Robin and Christine love this area that they're looking at. They're in the mountains, they can build, divide some lots of land, who the fuck cares? But the next thing we need to do is convince Janelle and Mary. Before I get into Seeking Sister Wife, I want to introduce one of my favorite podcasts to you. You probably already listened to it because it's kind of a big deal. It's called A Date with Dateline. It's hosted by two hilarious women, Kimberly and Katie. Take a listen and trust me, subscribe. They will be your next go-to number one podcast.
Diabolical.
Vengeance.
Betrayal.
Bad hair.
Leaning.
Hi, everyone. This is Kimberly.
And this is Katie.
And we have a weekly podcast called A Date with Dateline, a recap of Dateline episodes. We talk about important issues like grainy surveillance footage, cell phone towers, Andrea Canning's white jeans, and Mankey's hankies. We delve into the details of any victim who's ever loved life or lit up a room.
So find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and iTunes to make A Date with Dateline.
And remember, don't watch alone.
A Date with Dateline is a podcast hosted by two professional amateur true crime TV experts with no formal training but evidence lockers filled with snark and uninformed opinions.
Oh, hey, Ashley and Dimitri. You can't get your mind off of California and Vanessa. I know, so relatable. Gah, I hate these two. I really do. They make me almost hate the show. If it weren't for having to recap this, I would fast forward right through these two assholes. They just keep using words like vibe and, energy and all this kind of bullshit. They're even using their kids, Candida and Neonatal, as reasons to move closer to LA. They've already trademarked their names and shit, so clearly they're thirsty for fame. They just want to get closer to LA so they're closer to agents and opportunities and, you know, fellow ontological architects. Oh, and you know who else could be close? If she moved to California with them? Vanessa. Oh, and look at that. She just happened to fly in from Seattle to eat dry waffles and wilted spinach with them. Gee, that worked out perfectly. Oh my God. I mean, yeah, and not confusing at all for your kids who see women coming in and out, kissing Dimitri. What the fuck? And did you notice that they were not eating at the wicker table? Told you. That thing is just for show and it is completely impractical. They're not even sitting at it. So while they're leaning over this ginormous stone coffee table, because of course, natural elements and all, they ask Vanessa if she wants to move in with them and move to California. Vanessa looked genuinely stunned, and to producers, she said she didn't know that they were at the point of wanting her to move in with them, let alone move to a different state. But you know she's lying, because remember last week she was saying that she was nervous to meet Mama Donna because that is almost her soon-to-be mother-in-law? They're all full of shit. I think Vanessa is an actress, or she's on this weird ontological journey or some shit that the Snowdens have going on. And I also think Ashley is pregnant again. If you look at her in the blue jumpsuit, she's posturing herself as someone who has a belly that they're trying to hide. I don't know. Take a look at it. Let me know what you think. Now, ultimately, Vanessa says yes. Wherever they go, she will go because it is home. It's fucking weird, and it gets even weirder because she goes into their bedroom later. What the fuck? And then they start talking about, oh, they need to get physical. This is off screen, of course. She wants to get more physical with Dimitri, and it's just so freaking weird. And we find out that Vanessa is now eating vegan or grain-free or whatever the hell it is that the Snowdens subscribe themselves to at this point. I just hate it because it doesn't feel real to me. That's really why I'm being so harsh with them. I just can't shake the feeling that we're being had. They're just super shady, and that's all. Now let's talk about Bernie and Paige McGee. Paige, that little sleuth of a wife, she found Bernie's phone, dug through it, and she found these flirty texts. I don't know if they were like doing sexting stuff or what, but she busted him, and I don't blame her at all for being pissed and absolutely heartbroken. Bernie should not have been doing that. He was absolutely in the wrong. However, he was kind of right that he is going to have to flirt with other women. He's going to have to get physical with someone at some point. And if they're dating and they're looking for someone to bring into their marriage, that's going to exist at some point. Now, ultimately, they both agree they got to put it past them, but come on. There is no freaking way Paige is going to forget. There's no way on earth. Bottom line, she's a woman. Forgiving is a choice, yes, but a woman's basic DNA has a lifelong memory. It could be stored in our ovaries or something, I don't know, but the recall of a woman scorned is, well, it's faster than the speed of light, trust me. Now, this brings us back to this woman named Brandy. She's the woman who retired her uterus after her last kid. That used to be a deal breaker for Paige and Bernie, but they're just going to have to deal with it because Brandy's nice and everything. I mean, she's crazy for not wanting to use her uterus to bear more McGee's, but, you know, she's nice enough. Worst case scenario, maybe she's got a friend or something that they'll meet and, you know, she'll agree to birth more McGee's. Shouldn't be too hard, right? Well, that's what she said. Now, we didn't see any of the Aldridges this week. What the fuck? But we've got plenty of the Winders. Too much of the Winders.
Peter built the church on the rock of our faith. His banner over me is love.
Oh my God, that sad, sad service with Kip and Tammy and Sophie and what's the kid's name, Sadie or something. Oh man, I mean, I have seen a lot of LDS shoot off, LDS adjacent services in home, and this was one of the worst. Probably right up there with A Courtship. Remember that documentary? I think I recapped it for one of my Patreon episodes. It was giving me all the awkward cringes. And of course, I mean, the thrill of watching dorks singing off key well outside their octave range. The only way that scene would have gotten any better was to have Christine Brown over there in the corner readying herself for her Let Me Call You Sweetheart debut. Okay, well, these three are still on this whole thing about how they want to show the world that they love each other. But I saw Tammy, that's wife number one. She was staring at Sophie when Sophie was just looking at, what's his name, Kip, Colton, whatever, when she was sipping her caffeine-free hot cocoa with the spoon still in there. Man, if looks could kill, Tammy would have, okay, I was going to make like a Jodi Arias joke here, but that just seems a little too close to home with the whole Mormon thing and okay, well, that's why you need to listen to A Date with Dateline, okay? Anyhow, you know, I do feel for Tammy. I think she's a little weird. I mean, I probably could not carry on a long conversation with her about anything, but I get why she would be hesitant about inviting a new wife in because she's busy with a toddler. But Colton and Sophie, wife number two, they're just living in almost like their own little honeymoon world. It's like this fantasy or something. You add another wife, it sounds all wholesome and Duggar-ish, and maybe you'll get some fame of the Browns with the money and all that. Oh, look, there's Sophie. Yes, we know Colton. We saw her in the pictures too. You guys really, I mean, I hate to make fun of people for things that they can't help, but Colton, you gotta drop a ball or two and lower that voice. If the one chick from The Dropout on the podcast, the one, what's her name? Oh, Elizabeth Holmes. Yeah, if Elizabeth Holmes can drop her voice down and talk like this, you can too, Colton. So we leave off there creating a dating profile. Tammy obviously is pissed about it because Colton is spreading his time even more thin, probably because she's the one taking care of Sadie on her own. And here we have wife number two, Sophie, just giggling. She thinks it's going to be great. She thinks she's got the sweet spot since she's the second wife, but I think things will change if Sophie gets pregnant and has a kid and she realizes, oh, I invited this other wife in and now he's not paying as much attention to me. Hopefully next week we will see more of the Aldridges and less of the Winders. I'm kind of excited to see how this whole Jen thing goes down. Jen, aka Tanya Harding, the ice skater. Coming up next, I have my good buddy Grant Rutter from Grant's Rants talking about Real Housewives of New Jersey. So make sure you stick around right after the break. I have with me today a very, very special guest. I first heard Grant's unforgettable voice on AfterBuzz TV, as I know many of you did quite a few years ago now. He is the current executive producer of NBC's The Good Place, the podcast, and you know him, you love him as the one and only host of Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk, Grant Rutter. Grant, I am so thrilled that you are here today with me. Welcome.
Oh my goodness, Jodi, thank you for that amazing opening. That was so nice of you. I appreciate it. I sound so legit on the show.
Try to keep it very professional because you just have this aura about you. You're this, your voice. Did you always have a voice like this?
I did. I think it comes into me kind of being an old soul, and I kind of channel it for my grandmother a little bit. Granny June is an old Rhode Island native and very keeping it real, real rough and Rhode Island tough.
Oh, I love it. See, and I think of you as just being in this, you know, like the Hollywood jungle. You know, you're the middle of everything. You see it all. You hear it all. Do you see a lot of stars, star sightings? Is it just like a normal thing or... is that just a myth for us Midwesterners?
I thought about this the other day. I mean, I do. It's just like I couldn't really off the top of my head even name like a lot of these people just because sometimes you see people in the grocery store. Sometimes you see people at events. You know, I do work for, you know, a large entertainment brand and I work on different lots around L.A. So there are different people that you, you know, can run into or who's in front of you in Starbucks and things like that. But it's all very... passing, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to lunch with these people. Maybe I'll work with them on a project sometimes, but you know, they're there and they're going about their day and they go on. I mean, I'm not seeing, you know, like the Gwyneth Paltrows of the world. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I've seen, you know, some of the Vanderpump Rules kids out, you know, different movie stars, I guess you could see who are doing press will be kind of walking around and who's getting in an SUV. It's kind of things like that. But you know, no one's coming over to my house, you know?
Oh, that sounds magical. About as exciting as it gets. My kid's teacher came to his soccer game today. That's all I get. That's all the brush with greatness around here. So that sounds awesome. Well, I wanted to talk to you about The Real Housewives of New Jersey, because you really go into, so many shows when you're talking, and even just Hollywood gossip on your podcast. But Housewives, I feel like you're kind of like a housewife whisperer. Maybe it goes along with the old soul thing. You know what they're thinking, or you know what their agendas are. So I'm going to ask you what you think about Margaret first, because I think of her as kind of the matriarch of New Jersey, even though she's new. What do you think about her?
You know, Margaret, I didn't have much of an opinion about her in her first season because she had an easy one, I think. Yes, she was up against crazy Siggy, but nobody was Team Siggy. So by default, a lot of people went to Margaret. So I said, well, now what's Margaret going to do without a storyline? You know, her nemesis is gone. So now she's going to have to really, you know, sink or swim here. And so I actually went to dinner with her through a friend right before the season started. And she was just as lovely as she can be on the show. Now, we see a lot of different sides to her on the show, but I will say she kept it real. She looked and acted just like she does on the show when she's, you know, with Melissa and not fighting. But yeah, very real chick. And I enjoy talking with her quite a bit. And she owns every part of it. And she's just, this is what she does. And that's what she said. And no regrets. And I like it. She stands behind what she says. And that's how you know that she can keep it real. So I actually really like her. And I think she had a great second season. And I believe that she changed the show for the better. Because The Real Housewives of New Jersey probably should have been canceled about 4 years ago. But now, you know, there's a new dawn here, and it came with her last season, and it's been continuing. So I like her.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you said that, because I love her. Even when people were dissing her with the little mini ponytails, I loved it. I thought she rocked them. I thought she looked cute. I love Margaret. I love her.
I like that she wore them and didn't care. I like that she didn't care. She just put them on and she dealt with all the flack. And that was everyone's first question. Why aren't you wearing pigtails? You're wearing pigtails. And she said, yeah, I am. I kind of like that.
And you know what? It was smart of her, because that's how you remembered her. That was a good move.
Yep, the one with the pigtails.
I also think probably one of the best things that happened to her this season, besides Siggy not being here, was having Jennifer on, because the juxtaposition was beautiful.
That girl, I've said it before, she came across so ignorant on this show. But if there's a series to be ignorant on, I mean, the lead of this show is not exactly the smartest tool in the shed. You know, so I mean, it's like not too surprising, but also like I definitely had, and I rarely have this because I see the entertainment value behind it, but I had kind of some secondhand embarrassment for Jennifer.
I did and didn't. During that Oklahoma trip, she did not understand how she was coming off. I truly think she was ignorant, but almost in a naive way, if that makes any kind of sense. Like, she really, truly did not understand how she was coming off. But when she dissed Teresa's necklace and was like, oh, that was ugly, that was too much to me. I mean, you know better at that point. That was above and beyond.
I feel like she's like a Kelly Dye, where when she's up against the wall, she'll just kind of like a cat, she'll scratch it. You know what I mean? Like, she'll come at you like that. Yeah, that's what I think that she's like. She's impulsive, you know?
So do you think that she'll get another season?
I think so. I don't see why not. I mean, you know, she's all up in Team Teresa. So, I mean, she didn't piss off the boss. For years, I've called this show Teresa of New Jersey.
I am not down with this Teresa stuff anymore. I feel like when she went to prison or camp, that just should have been the end of it. Let's just be done with it, move on, recast, whatever we need to do. I think she's getting too sympathetic of an edit. I know Joe's in prison and, you know, in true Jersey fashion, yada, yada, yada. But I'm over it. I think everyone is over it. We don't want to hear the storyline anymore. Yes, you have four daughters and you're working hard to take care of them. But what else are we really getting out of you? Nothing.
I don't understand the passion behind the tree huggers. I mean, I'm a fan of Teresa in the fact that the same way I'm a fan of Vicky. They're just their originals. They're there, you know, they started it all. Like, I respect their position on the show. But I mean, I just see and watch the thing that she's doing, and she's really pushing her relationship with her sister-in-law, Melissa. Mm-hmm. She's really pushing that to the limit. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what are you doing? You know, you look ridiculous. So I don't understand what the passion is behind these people who just love her so much. She's, you know, she's a little off.
Yeah, I would say a lot off. And I just have a hard time feeling sympathetic when you've frauded people out of money and avoided your taxes. And
people tend to forget that. I mean, I know I do. Yeah, I forget that she literally frauded the U.S. government out of millions of dollars so she could have that house. I don't know how the hell she's still living in that house. I've never heard of such a thing.
I don't know either.
I've seen people lose their homes in foreclosures a lot, especially where I grew up. People lived way beyond their means. I was in the suburbs of Rhode Island, and, you know, people had a lot, there were a lot of foreclosures. And I don't know how the hell, that's not like she's in, like, you know, a decent sized house. She's in, like, basically like a McMansion. How the hell is she still in that house?
And the cars and the jewelry and the clothes and the shoes.
It's traveling.
It's interesting. And that lawyer that was around that she was supposedly linked to, and all of a sudden now he's out of the picture. And actually, I just saw something today. Oh, I'm not sure where I saw it, but that she's out with some younger man that she was snapped with. Yeah. I don't believe it. Well, I think it's staged. But
that lawyer spoke to it. Yeah, the lawyer spoke to it. He's still around, that James Leonard. Yeah, he's still around. And
is he?
He said that she was being escorted because she was in Miami and she was tipsy. So that's the cover for the young man as of now. Who knows?
Now, with Melissa, I think she's still just there because they have the whole family drama thing. Between Melissa and Joe, I find him very attractive. He's a very cute little man. But this, you know, oh, should mommy work? Should she not? A woman's place is in the home. This has been every single season. And same goes for Teresa. If you're not going to give us anything different, let's just leave the Judices and the Gorgas behind.
Do you know that every other season she's on, they wrap filming and then they put that house up on the market and then they're like right back in it the next year. Like, I don't understand what they're doing with that property. I mean, that house has been for sale for as long as she's been on the show.
Yeah. And they didn't move and then they moved back into it at one point. Yeah. Something's going on with that. I heard it's not done very well.
Yeah. I heard the
shoddy
same
construction.
Thing. Yeah. I mean, it's very attractive. I think it's a very attractive home. I looked at the real estate listing and looked at some of the photos, you know, the indoor outdoor looks. And I mean, it's a very impressive home, but I mean, I don't know, you know, to what quality, like you said, and I don't know what their deal is with that. Like, there's a lot of stuff and they never once this season, maybe they will in this part two or part three of the reunion, but I don't believe they really addressed what happened to that restaurant. That was the whole storyline last year, was they opened up a family restaurant.
Yeah, I remember reading something that it really was someone else's restaurant.
Yeah, Joe mentioned something briefly about it, but then we never really, like, that was a whole storyline and it just evaporated.
I think it's just BS. I think they probably paid the people, hey, can we put our name and use a storyline or something? Because remember, Joe also had something where it was a recycling business that he had.
Yes, yes.
All these little businesses that come and go, and then she had her Envy store, and then she didn't, and then reopened it. It's just exhausting, and I don't even want to keep up with them anymore. I'm totally over it. Jackie, I kind of like. I think she needs another season.
Well, yes, there's been a lot of rumors that she's out, but that they've debunked all that and said, you know, that those conversations haven't been made yet. I mean, the show hasn't even been picked up. I think that she has another season in her, though.
Yeah, I think we just need to see where she goes with it. I liked that she was the only one that stood up to Teresa and she wasn't afraid of her. I enjoyed that. I don't know besides that what else she's got, but I'm willing to give her another season.
I don't like that she turned this sister storyline into a thing. I mean, if I were her sister, I'd be offended. And so you haven't spoken to me in 15 years and you get on a reality show for a few months and the first thing you do is pull me on for a story. I would see right through that. That's a no-go for me. That's an insult. I would not be into that at all. But, you know, I hope they keep Jackie on the show, because Teresa said at the reunion that anyone that went against her is no longer in the room. And Andy Cohen, it was full Kool-Aid smile laughing at that. You know, she shouldn't be allowed to get away with that. It's not her show. So they really should keep Jackie around just to show Teresa, you don't have any say in casting. No.
Right. Well, big mistake, I think, was bringing Danielle back as friend of. In any capacity, I do not want her on the show.
I disagree. I actually really like her on the show.
No,
I don't think she's the best person. She actually appeared on an episode of Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk last year, which is very interesting. I actually think that she's kind of the root of all the drama. And I know that she's a very unfavorable person. I mean, I belong to some of these Facebook groups. I mean, when she announced her divorce, I mean, there wasn't one positive comment around it. I mean, people really don't like her. But I think it's okay to have someone you love to hate. And I think she brings a lot of drama to the table.
You know what? I think for me this season, I took the part of her not liking Marty's kids. I mean, she really came hard for them. And I just don't like that. That's just real icky to me. I thought the drama between the husbands, that was totally cooked up, right? That was not real between Joe and Marty.
I thought so at first, but then I said, how are you going to get these middle-aged grown men to literally have a fight and push each other in a pool? Now, I question their placement. Why were these people standing by a pool if Jennifer's supposed to have a huge house? It's supposed to be so massive. Why would they be conveniently placed by a pool? So that was a little questionable to me. But I can't imagine, like, these guys. I mean, I think maybe Marty likes the spotlight a little bit, but Margaret's husband, Joe, I can't imagine him playing into a producer's hand, personally.
Yeah, I swear I saw a smile on Margaret's Joe's face both times. And my husband rarely watches the show, but he was in there watching the episode where Marty got pushed into the pool. And he was like, wait, go back. It looks like he jumped. And we went back and looked, and it does kind of look like he kind of took a step towards the little hot tub area and then just kind of jumped in himself. Now, whether he had to do that because he hadn't, you know, nowhere else to fall, like you said, kind of paired with the fact, why would they be out there? And just the things that Marty was saying were so bizarre for a man to be saying about someone else's wife, even if you hated him. It just didn't ring true to me.
I mean, later they said his phone and his shoes and his suit were ruined. I mean, you know, I can't imagine for any reality show being pushed in a pool knowing that I have my phone in my pocket. I mean, nothing's worth that. That's ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, is Danielle manipulative enough to have pushed Marty to that limit, you know, to say those ridiculous things? It's possible.
Yeah, I guess she just scares me. I'm a big wuss in real life. I think she just scares me. I'm afraid of her. So maybe I should say I love her. I don't want her coming after me. Okay, so I'm going to ask you real quick before I let you go run into Gwyneth Paltrow at Starbucks. What did you think about this season's Celebrity Big Brother? I am new to Big Brother altogether. I did watch this season. Hold on, you tell us who you loved seeing on this.
Well, I have lobbied for Dina Lohan to be on one of these shows forever. And I know she was on Marriage Bootcamp, but those WeTV shows are way too edited for me, and I need, like, all of her. And so I was blessed to have her on a show that came with live feeds. I mean, really. And I watched these live feeds. I studied them very closely. I learned a lot about her life, what her kids are up to. She talked a little bit about the ex-husband, Michael. I think that she broke news that Lindsay's show was picked up because she talked about Lindsay going back to start filming in early May. So that show was not yet formally picked up by MTV. So that was some juice. I loved it.
And do you think she is being catfished?
Not anymore, because the guy came out and there was a huge thing that Us Weekly broke, but then Michael Lohan jumped in, and Michael is still very involved in Dina's life. And Michael tracked him down. He said, I did a bunch of retweets on my Twitter, but Michael said, I was the one that did this, not Us Weekly. I did this. I was the one that got in touch with him and felt out the situation. And so his picture is now available, and, you know, he's a good-looking guy. So maybe she is correct after all, but they all should have waited and did a special episode when she got out of that house, because she could have been paid for it.
I was gonna say she could have gone to MTV, Catfish, or anywhere. Any channel would have paid for that. But yeah. I'm still a little skeptical, because I know that they got the guy's picture and they showed it, and he's like, oh yeah, I'm the guy, I'm real. But that could be some, you know, troll showing a picture of a guy and being like, oh yeah, that's me. I mean, have we seen him talking live on camera?
No, you're right. I mean, anything's possible. Yeah, it could be still a fake.
I mean, Dina, I mean, just thrown in there. Wow. That was that threw me for a loop. I was not prepared for that when I jumped into the season. And Candy, too.
Candy was great on the show. They really hit it off, the two of them. I mean, I watched them play pool and cards and all this stuff and just listen to the small talk. It was great. I actually still kind of missed the show.
Yeah, it was very short. Well, Grant, thank you so much for coming. Where can everyone find you and listen to The Voice? You should have your own podcast, oh, wow. The Voice.
I would love it. Give me a chance and check me out over on mine if you haven't already. Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk. It's a weekly show. We get a lot of reality TV on there, but also some commentary on a lot of things. It's really commentary heavy. I like to think I'm pretty opinionated, and that's kind of my platform to say those things. And, you know, it's always said with ingest, and it's a good time. It's a positive thing.
Yeah, and Grant, you're like me. You like reading the blind items and...
Actually, really getting into the blinds. Oh. Yeah, I'm getting into the blinds. It's kind of like a game.
Oh, I love it. And my personal favorite is blindgossip.com. I know a lot of people love Crazy Days and Nights, but I love Blind Gossip. And they're pretty right on the... I mean, they're right on the money.
Yeah, nowadays there's just so many celebrities, though it's hard. I could be thinking in one way, and then it's like at the end, it's like they also appeared like on a reality show, and it's like, well, hold up, yeah. Wait a minute. If there's any whatever in sports, if there's any athletes involved, I'm really out of the picture. So I really don't know.
Yeah,
but I do. I like to look at them. They're like brain teasers.
Yeah, and you know, and you have great guests on your shows, like you were saying, behind the scenes with your Dinner with Margaret, and we'll have to go back and listen to that interview with Danielle Staub. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I had heard Margaret on to discuss last season. It's usually about commentary. I've got a lot of other podcasters on and folks. It's not really a celebrity show. Every once in a while, someone will pop in. But I want to have a kind of a safe space where we can kind of talk, you know, see what we want, kitchen table talk. You know what I mean? Like, how are you not going to get anyone to come on and spill any trade secrets? But, you know, we can have people on and tell the truth. That's the difference. You know what I mean? We can give real talk and not all this media train stuff.
See, that's how you and I are like, where my mom taught me manners. I talk behind people's backs. You know, I want to be able to, just like you, have our opinions about it and not have to worry about having people on and then, you know, kissing their butt later. And oh my gosh, you were just fantastic.
I won't do that. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you can go on YouTube and watch anyone sitting in Entertainment Tonight or the Bravo Clubhouse, and they're all very so carefully measured in their thoughts and opinions. I mean, that's everywhere. I like to think that we're going to give you a little bit more of an edge.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. And what are they going to tell you that they already haven't written in their blogs or, like you said, told Andy? They're not going to be giving, you know, us the scoop. So let's figure it out ourselves and talk about it.
Read between the lines.
Grant, thank you again. Remember, look up Grant's Rants on Apple Podcasts?
Apple Podcasts, yeah.
Anywhere where you're listening to this now.
If you don't listen to podcasts through iPhones or iTunes, just search Spreaker, Spreaker, because that's the platform that I'm on. Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk. Full episodes are over on Spreaker. And I'm over on the Instagram at It's Grant's Rants.
Oh, well, thank you, Grant. And next time you see... Oh, let's say, who are you going to see at Starbucks? Let's make a prediction.
Oh, who's a washed-up reality star?
How about one of the Dancing with the Stars people? Maxim Shmurkovsky.
That's funny. I actually have seen him at a restaurant not far from where I live, at a Russian restaurant, and he was just in there chilling. That's so funny you mentioned that.
Well, there you go. Yeah. All right, it's meant to be. Well, you have a little tango with him next time you see him.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you once again to Grant for taking time out to come on the podcast. Make sure you check out Grant's Rants. I was on an episode of his earlier this week. We talked about Jussie Smollett, R. Kelly, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills in New York. It was a lot of fun, and Grant is just an awesome guy. So make sure you go and check out Grant's Rants. Make sure you check out Date with Dateline this week on Moms on the Rocks. Carrie and I are talking cold cases, Charlie Project. We can't freaking get enough of it. So if you like true crime and you like some snarky bitches, head on over there. Amanda and I on Total Request Podcast. That is on patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. By request this week, we recapped Tough Love. It was, I believe, on VH1, Season 1, Episode 3, Men and, like, Sex on the Brain or something. It'll blow your mind, especially in this whole Me Too movement era. Wow. Thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe, leave a review, and have an awesome week, an awesome weekend. And until next time, stay salty.